have Fulham taken a backward step this season?
I think with the standard of the league improving and Fulham not being ambitious enough in the market necessarily, it's hard not to see how we don't slump even just a little bit.
Who is Emmanuel Emega and could he be a Premier League star soon?
Looks like he has all the raw materials to be a really exciting top-level centre-forward and has the kind of character that you need to thrive in the Premier League.
And how does Elly Kruppi's finishing compare to the best strikers in Europe?
It's Elly Kruppi! That's what he does!
Hello, I'm Lola Katz-Roberts, standing in for a stricken Ian McIntosh, who is no longer locked on his landing, but bedbound with a serious case of man flu. That is a joke, of course. Get well soon, Ian. But just like last week, the show must go on, and that show is Route 1 in association with FitStairs. It's football fast, no faff. Let's go Route 1. Let's start with a team that's been going a bit under the radar this season, Fulham. Since they were promoted in 2022, they've barely ever worried about relegation. Not that they're likely to be too worried now, it's still early in the season for one thing, but I bet those supporters have spent some time sussing out at least three worse teams than them who will ultimately calm their anxieties. At the moment, there are only five to choose from as the Cottagers sit 15th, with two of them, Nottingham Forest and West Ham, looking upwardly mobile after recent managerial changes. Slim pickings could be about to get slimmer. Fulham have won just three league games so far, and one of them was courtesy of a 94th-minute own goal howler from Leeds' Gabriel Goodmanson. In fact, Fulham are yet to win a league game without the assistance of an own goal. Own goal is the Cottagers' top scorer so far. Saturday's defeat at Everton was their fifth in six games, with only a 3-0 win over 10-man doom-laden Wolves offering respite. On top of that, doubt surrounds Marco Silva. He's yet to extend his contract, which expires this summer, though talks with owner Shahid Khan are scheduled for this week. So, is this a slump or a sign of something more serious? A relegation battle seems totally unrealistic for a squad with that much quality. But are we watching Fulham regress under Silva, or will normal mid-table service resume shortly? Elizabeth Barnard from the Fulhamish podcast is here to answer our questions. Elizabeth, over to you.
Regarding the slump, I think there's a short-term, a medium-term and a long-term view from Fulham fans. In the short term, obviously five losses out of six is nowhere near good enough. But I think in the medium term, all fans are generally still on board with Marco Silva, on the whole. Four of those losses in a row came against very difficult teams. Bournemouth, Villa and Newcastle were all away from home and Arsenal at home. And none of those games were we battered in. None of those games were we totally embarrassed, even though there were moments where we performed badly and weren't strong enough and that kind of thing. I think the long term, though, is the thing that really, really concerns Fulham fans. Marco Silva is a manager that we all adore. He's done so much for the club, and there is a real impasse at the moment between him and the owner, Tony Khan. During the transfer window, he's spoken out, especially this summer, about business coming way too late in the window and not being ambitious enough. And now he's maybe underperforming just a little bit, even in the short term. I worry that the Khans will use this as an opportunity to pull the trigger and change someone who's speaking out and criticising them. It would be really devastating for Fulham fans. In terms of where I see us going then in the long term, I think with the standard of the league improving and Fulham not being ambitious enough in the market necessarily, it's hard not to see how we don't slump even just a little bit. And I think that does catch up with you. We finished 11th last season, which is really good. But this season, we definitely won't finish that high. And while I think we hopefully will be clear from a relegation battle, maybe it'll be 13th. And then maybe without proper investment, it will be 16th. And then does Silva really want to stick around for that project?
Thanks, Elizabeth. Be sure to check out the Fulhamish pod, and not just if you're a Fulham fan. Give it a listen after they've played your team. You will enjoy it. There's a link in the episode description. FitStairs make Fulham 11-2 to be relegated this season, or, if you have a more positive view of the Cottagers' outlook, 9-2 to finish in the top half. If you're feeling very optimistic about Fulham's future, you can get them at 20-1 to win the Carabao Cup. This season, Chelsea fans may have been keeping an eye on Strasbourg's Emmanuel Emega, who will join the Blues next summer. If they have, they're likely to have been very impressed. Omega's been a key figure as Strasbourg have picked up right where they left off last season, challenging at the top of Ligue 1. Omega scored 9 goals in his first season in Alsace, 14 in his second, and is on track to better that this season with his 6 in 8 games so far. At 22, he's already Strasbourg's captain, and this week, following an injury to Wout Weghorst, he was called up to the Netherlands senior squad for the first time. This is a player whose star is very much on the rise. So let's find out a bit more about him. What kind of a player is Omega, and will he be ready to go straight into Chelsea's first team? Tom Williams, bring us up to speed.
My suspicion is that Emmanuel Omega might not be ready to go straight into the Chelsea starting 11. But then given Chelsea's issues in the number 9 position this season, who knows? He's certainly got a huge amount of ability, very tall, rangy, mobile centre forward, loves working the channels, loves running in behind, relatively cool finisher, occasionally misses what seem like quite presentable chances, only to then score a really nicely taken goal a few minutes later. Like any self-respecting Dutch centre forward, he has a huge amount of self-confidence, is very popular within the Strasbourg squad, loves a provocative goal celebration as well. Got a lot of criticism from Strasbourg's fans after his move to Chelsea was announced, but in typical Omega style, he scored in his first game after that move had been announced. And then after a recent spell out of the team with a hamstring injury, he scored again last weekend in the victory over Lille. Looks like he has all the raw materials to be a really exciting top-level centre-forward and has the kind of character that you need to thrive in the Premier League.
Thanks, Tom. If anyone knows his French football, it's Tom. He wrote the book on it. And if you haven't read Va Va Voom, you really should. There's a link in our episode description. Now, it's time for Heavy Metal Football Statistics. Producer Helena, crank up that guitar. For anyone who has a mistrust of statistics and sees them as pointless jargon, full disclosure, you will not enjoy this next bit. But today, we're zeroing in on non-penalty goals minus non-penalty XG. Essentially, goals scored minus the goals that should have been scored with the distorting variable of penalties removed. There are two familiar faces leading Europe's top 5 leagues, Harry Kane with plus 5 and Erling Haaland with plus 3.7. That is to say they're scoring 5 and 3.7 more goals than they should have been given the quality of the chances. So, are we saying the two best number 9s in world football are scoring at an unsustainable rate? We're not. They do this all the time, they're just that good. For 7 of the last 8 years, Kane and Haaland have scored many more than they should have. Haaland's personal best of plus 6 in 22-23 was comfortably bettered by Kane's plus 8.3 in the same season. This is what elite strikers do. Everton strikers, take note. Danny Welbeck, on the other hand, who sits 7th on this list at plus 2.6, has never outscored his XG by so much. In fact, his next best score is plus 0.2, and he's underperformed by as much as minus 3.6 in the past. We wouldn't therefore expect Welbeck's fine goal-scoring run to continue, so maybe keep your powder dry on those England recall shouts for now. Elly Kruppi in 15th is outscoring his XG for the second season running, plus 2.3 up from plus 1.5 last year. The early data is encouraging for Bournemouth's new star, but we need to see a bit more before we start projecting anything about the long-term future. If we flip the table and look at who's underperforming their XG the most, there's a silver lining for Fiorentina, who are yet to win in Serie A this season and prop up the table. Moise Kean's non-penalty goals minus XG of minus 3.9, the most in Europe's top 5 leagues, is miles out of whack with previous years, not least last season when he scored 19 Serie A goals from an XG of 19.4. If he can return to previous conversion rates, Fiorentina's fortunes should improve. Now, the same cannot be said for the highest Premier League participant on the inverted list, Beto. The Everton man's non-penalty goals minus XG of minus 3.1 doesn't appear to be an outlier. It's almost identical to last season's minus 3. His cause is also not helped by this being his 5th straight season of minus numbers. It's 2 years in a row too for teammate Tierno Barry, slightly up to minus 1.3 from minus 1.7 last season. So don't be surprised to see the Toffees dip into the transfer market for a new striker in January. One man who might be to the Toffees' taste in the transfer market is Miles Lewis-Skelly. The left-back was a high-profile omission from the latest England squad, with Thomas Tuchel explaining he needs more game time to be a candidate for his World Cup squad, stating fairly pointedly, "It's not enough just to be a good tourist." The youngster's only made 7 Premier League appearances so far this season, all as a substitute, with Everton, West Ham, Fulham and Nottingham Forest all said to be monitoring him ahead of a potential January move. Arsenal will, of course, be reluctant to sell, but a loan deal could be beneficial for all. The Turkish Football Federation has suspended 1,024 players as part of its wider probe into suspected gambling offences. In total, this includes 27 top-flight players, including Galatasaray's Eren Elmalı and Beşiktaş duo of Nesip Ünsal and Ersin Destanoglu, who all deny any wrongdoing with the full support of their clubs. The investigation's already seen 149 officials banned between 8 and 12 months, though with a much higher number of players suspended, the TFF has appealed to FIFA to allow an extra 15 days transfer and registration period on top of the January window to allow clubs to redress the balance in depleted squads. Games will continue in the top two divisions for now, but with the third and fourth divisions suspended, this is definitely one to keep an eye on. Despite a start to his Real Madrid tenure that's seen Los Blancos win 15 of their 17 games so far, Xavi Alonso's somehow feeling the heat. According to journalist Romain Molina, under Carlo Ancelotti, some of the players were permitted to head to Ibiza straight after games rather than returning to Madrid. Not only that, they were pretty much allowed to show up to training whenever they wanted. Well, this just hasn't washed with Xavi Alonso in charge, and that's causing a rift between some of the players' entourages and the manager, who feel Alonso is unduly meddling in the players' affairs. Well, that all seems very on brand for Real Madrid, if you ask me. How long are we giving, Xavi? That was Route 1. It was football fast, no faff, and it is here every weekday at about 3 p.m. If you like it, give it a follow, and if you really like it, give it a review. I've been Lola Katz-Roberts, Helena Freemantle was in the producer's chair, Chris Smith was in the writer's room, and we'll be pumping Ian McIntosh with Lemsip and Night Nurse in the hope that he'll be back with you tomorrow.